Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1971 with a release date of Friday, August 7th, 2015, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST, Hams Worldwide, prepare for International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend. The U.S. Navy tries to rein in a satellite that's gone rogue. In Arizona, hams fine-tune their emergency communication skills. All this and more in Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1971, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent, on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Wadsworth, Ohio, Stephen Kinford, N8WB.
As hams around the world prepare for the International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend on August 15th and 16th, one shining beacon in Sweden is glowing with the light of a little extra pride. It's the Lightship Finn Grundet, a museum ship in Stockholm built in 1903 and was in service until its decommissioning in 1969. It's just become the 400th participant to register for next weekend's global event. The Södertörns Radio Amateur Club, SK0QO, plans to put the former Marine Navigation Aid on the air for the two-day event as 7S0SFJ. The moored lighthouse is amongst numerous ones around the world now registered along with an international collective of lighthouses for the Amateur Radio Weekend. This is a very different role for the Swedish lightship from the one it was built to have at the turn of the earlier century. As an aid to navigation then, it would emit two consecutive light flashes every 20 seconds as its signature, and it was visible for a distance of 11 nautical miles. Now with the hams using the ship to sail their signals across the ionosphere, the club is hoping the lightship Finn Grundet will really go the distance in connecting them to some memorable QSOs. There's more action happening on the water for another group of hams. These amateurs also happen to be avid boaters, and they're preparing to catch a really big wave, 40 meters big in this case. They're gathering for an event known as British Island Waterways on the Air, taking place on August 29th to the 31st, a bank holiday weekend in Britain. Boating radio amateurs plan to use those days as an opportunity to connect with other boaters around the country. The primary band will be 40 meters, but communications will not be restricted to just one band, if conditions permit. Interested? Send an email to biwota2015@gmail.com, providing basic information such as your name, call sign, home and club location, and other relevant details. The boating hams are hoping for, what else? Smooth sailing. Arizona hams have a chance to fine-tune their emergency communication skills on August 29th and 30th at a state-sponsored training to be held in Phoenix. The two free 10-hour sessions at Papago Park Military Reservation will give volunteers the basics of relevant FCC rules and regulations, appropriate etiquette in an emergency operation center, as well as on the air, emergency communication deployment, and other tools. To participate, you'll need a valid amateur radio license and certificates of completion for FEMA courses 100B, 200B, 700A, and 800B. For more information, visit their website at www.az-ares.org or call 602-464-6225. A number of hams around the globe have made headlines this week. 10-year-old Holly Thomas is accustomed to studying for tests that score her good grades. But one of the latest exams she took granted the young scholar something else, national acclaim and a radio license. The Welsh girl passed her amateur radio test, scoring 20 out of 26 questions correctly, becoming what is believed to be Wales' youngest radio amateur. Her father, Christopher Thomas, MW0HAC of Copper Quarter Morpha in Wales, thinks it is simply, in his words, incredible. Quote, I've been involved with amateur radio for 30 years, since I was 17, and she has been watching me over the years, he says. I used to catch her in the room listening to the radio at a young age. Close quote. In addition to her dad, Holly has not been without her own group of Elmers locally. Thomas says his daughter's devotion to her radio studies has found her meeting with fellow hams for the past 4 months at the local amateur radio society every Monday after school. As for Holly, she says it's all about making new friends. Quote, ham radio is awesome. Everybody should get involved, she says. I enjoy making friends with people, and I have friends in Australia, New Zealand, and America. End quote. Frank and Lynn Skinner, a mountain climbing couple from Colorado Springs, the notion of peak-to-peak power means something a little different. Frank Skinner, K0JQZ, a retired Air Force Master Sergeant, now working as a civilian on Peterson Air Force Base, spends time climbing the rocks in the Pikes Peak region with his wife, Lynn, KC0YQF, a special education teacher. The couple takes along a miniature radio inside a small metal tin that used to hold breath mints and are aided by a 9-volt battery and a 35-foot wire. It's enough power and equipment for them to send and receive Morse code, one of the modes they use. The higher the altitude, generally, the less the interference. The Skinners have become a top competing team of activators in summits on the air, with Frank Skinner in 32nd place nationally, with 860 points, and Lynn Skinner in 47th place. Her 528 points have made her the top female activator in the United States. Three Hams have been given the YASME Excellence Award for what the group's directors deem a significant contribution to amateur radio, whether operational, technical, or organizational. They are Mike Myrtle, K7IR, of Washington State, for his revolutionary invention of a tunable Yagi antenna that was later made available to the amateur radio community under the brand name Step-IR. Koos Fokens, PA0KDF, of the Netherlands, for his investigations, measurements, and publications regarding noise in the amateur radio bands that played a key role in the global fight against broadband over power line, BPL interferences. James Ying, N2IW, of Rochester, New York, for his creation of an online scheduling application that was used by many W1AW portable operations during the 2014 ARRL Centennial and remains available without charge. The award consists of a cash grant and an engraved crystal globe. Is there a life after death? When it comes to the U.S. Navy's PCSAT NO-44, a satellite launched 14 years ago by the U.S. military, the answer is most definitely yes. The satellite, licensed in amateur satellite service, was originally designed to be a status reporting and message communication transmitter exclusively over the United States, using the Automatic Positioning Reporting System, or APRS. But it appears to have taken off on an orbit of its own and is now intermittently blasting European amateurs, mainly on the part of the spectrum around 150 megahertz. That's left Navy officials at a loss as how they might rein it in. The satellite, which has been plagued by battery issues early on that was causing it to reset, had its mission declared dead in 2003. According to the AMSAT website, quote, "Since this time, there have been numerous attempts to recover the satellite, but further attempts have been stopped. NO-44 remains active when conditions are favorable for sunlight, usually in midday passes, although by the time it covers about 30 to 45 minutes into eclipse, power drops." Close quote. PCSAT was built with a backup failsafe beacon on 144.39 MHz that would activate after a reset, providing a backup link if 145.825 MHz, the primary channel, died. The satellite resets on every orbit as a result of its negative power budget. Time, of course, is on everyone's side, since solar cells will eventually lose their ability to hold a charge and the orbit will simply decay. But the satellite's prospects of burning up and leaving the realm of the undead are believed to be decades away, and so the interference, like the satellite, lives on and on. Time may seem to stand still, at least for a few moments, at the WWV, the National Institute of Standards and Technology HF radio station in Fort Collins, Colorado. The Time and Frequency Standard Station is celebrating the completion of its successful first year with a restored vertical dipole, one it had stopped making use of in 1977. Last year, the 25 megahertz signal went back to transmitting at the antenna's original location for the first time on an experimental basis. The experiment, it seems, worked just fine. Matt Deutsch, N0RGT, WWV's lead electrical engineer, told ARRL that when the 25 megahertz broadcast returned last year, a broadband monopole was the antenna the station first used. But the monopole was eventually paired with the station's 2.5 megahertz standby transmitter. That's when the decision was made to resurrect the older vertical dipole, which, he said, after restoration, now looks just like it looked in 1977. He said the vertical dipole has a lower angle of radiation than the broadband monopole did and now has a transmitter of its own, radiating 2.5 kilowatts. The signal provides a way for radio operators to check their frequency calibrations or determine the exact time of day and can also help with propagation conditions on both 10 and 12 meters. WWV welcomes signal reports and comments sent to its email address at wwv@nist.gov. Time for you to identify your station. We are the amateur radio newsline heard on bulletin stations around the world. We are being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. By now, you've probably heard of the Elf on a Shelf, a Christmas figure designed to inspire good behavior. Well, think of Don Keith, N4KC, as the Elmer on a Shelf. The prolific author has just published two books that help newcomers sort out the often confusing business of being a successful ham. He spoke this week with Amateur Radio Newsline's Cheryl Lasik, KNBIK. Here is the first of two parts of their conversation.
Few of us have written one book, let alone 31. Who's written 31? Birmingham, Alabama, amateur radio operator Don Keith, N4KC, has done just that. Amazingly, Don has published 31 books since 1995. Don, good afternoon. Thanks for taking the time to join us on Amateur Radio Newsline.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
What are the titles of your ham radio books?
The new books are Get on the Air Now and The Amateur Radio Dictionary. And my book that's been out for a while is called Riding the Short Waves, Exploring the Magic of Amateur Radio.
Your new amateur radio books address some of the most common obstacles that plague new and even well-seasoned hams.
Looking at the growth of amateur radio, I came to the realization that there are basically five things that are preventing a lot of people who might be interested in our hobby from pursuing what you and I both know is a wonderful pastime. And those five obstacles are putting a station together, putting up an antenna, knowing what to do once you get on the air, knowing what to say when you make that very first QSO or contact, and finally, the jargon. As with any hobby or pastime, especially one that's been around for over 100 years now, we've developed our own language, and that actually is a real or perceived obstacle to a lot of people who are thinking about joining us.
What inspired you to approach amateur radio Elmering by writing these books? And secondly, how did you decide just how technical to make your books?
What I see as an active amateur myself are so many people who get licensed, but for whatever reason, they don't dive in and join the hobby full force. I don't think a lot of people get a chance to experience all that the hobby has to offer. And in the process, that means we lose a lot of great potential hams who never learn exactly all the various aspects of the hobby. That was the impetus for writing the last two books. Actually, I came up with the idea for Get on the Air Now first, and I intended to include in that book a glossary or dictionary of amateur radio terms to try to overcome that final perceived obstacle, the jargon. But as I gathered more and more terms, I ended up with over 1,600 definitions. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to include this in Get on the Air Now, but I'm also going to publish separately the amateur radio dictionary. And it's, as nearly as I can tell, nobody's done anything that is anywhere near as complete as this is. And it's going to be a work in progress as well. I've even found a lot of guys who have been hams as long as I have, which is more than 50 years, that I've been able to stump with some of the terms that are in the book. An amateur radio license is a license to learn, and you can learn as much of the technical aspect of the hobby as you want as you go along, but from day one, so long as you're able to plug things in and hook them up and get on the air, you don't really need to be that advanced technologically.
So you don't have to be an electronic engineer to do this, right?
I am a walking, breathing example of that fact.
We'll have part two next week. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Lasik, K9BIK, in Zion, Illinois.
AMSAT reports that its Fox 1A CubeSat has been paired with the Centaur rocket, which means the newly mated couple will be ready for launch this fall from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. AMSAT expressed hope for the new launch on its Meet the Fox project website, saying, quote, "This provides us with a way to put ham radio transponders into orbit and provides our university partners with a reliable platform for space-based research projects," end quote. The original announced launch date had been August 27th, but earlier this year, AMSAT moved the date to late in September. The satellite will be carrying a Mode B FM transponder with an uplink frequency of 435.100 MHz and a download frequency of 145.980 MHz. It will initially allow contacts from ground stations using HTs and dual-band antennas and will also transmit continuous telemetry during normal transponder operation. This is the latest in a series of CubeSats AMSAT has put together carrying amateur radio payloads. The satellites also support the work of universities on scientific and educational missions. The world of DX. Milan OK1DWC is using call sign E51DWC from Rarotonga Islands, OC-013-WAZ-32, where the Czech amateur will be at least through September. Part of his reason for a visit to the islands is to celebrate his birthday. He told the Ohio Penn DX newsletter he will be working 160 meters through 10 meters, holiday style, and his activity will include the 30, 17, and 12-meter bands using CW, SSB, and RIDI. Milan reports that by the last week in July, he had made 12,000 QSOs, send QSLs via his home call sign. Antonio EA5RM is in Bolivia from August 29th to September 15th and is working on a non-governmental organization project installing solar-powered HF radios used for medical purposes in isolated Bolivian Amazon jungle villages. He will be on the air during his spare time as CP1XRM using a barefoot solar-powered HF station, QSL card via his home call sign. As part of a barter agreement between NASA and Italy's ASI space agency, Italian ESA astronaut Paolo Nespoli, IZ0JPA, has been chosen for a trip to the International Space Station in May 2017. The Milan native holds bachelor's and master's degrees from the Polytechnic Institute of New York and is a professional engineer, pilot, and diver. He joined European Space Agency's European Astronaut Center in 1995. The Italian Army veteran will be making his third trip into space when he launches aboard a Soyuz vehicle. His first flight into space was in a short-duration flight in 2007, a two-week mission on the space shuttle's STS-120. His job was to help install the space station's Node 2 module. His 2017 flight will be ASI's third long-duration flight, coming after the 2013 trip taken by Luca Parmitano, KF5-KDP, and Samantha Cristoforetti, IZ0-UDF, this year. And while we're on the topic of the International Space Station, we close out our newscast with word that something very special is brewing on board there. Mike Askins, KE5-CXP, has that story.
There's nothing like sitting at the window with a nice hot cup of coffee and watching the world pass by. Now, the astronauts on the International Space Station can do just that. Instant coffee has always been available on the ISS, but now, for the first time, it can be enjoyed freshly brewed. Italian retailer Lavazza and Argotech, the provider of space food for European astronauts, have joined forces and created the Espresso, a device that overcomes the unique challenges of brewing coffee in space. Quoting here, "Making coffee in space isn't easy," according to Argotech officials. "This is the first capsule espresso machine that can work in the extreme conditions in space, where the principles that determine the fluid dynamic characteristic of liquids and mixtures are very different from those typically found on Earth," unquote. The microwave-sized box uses capsules similar to a Keurig machine to brew the caffeinated beverage as well as other hot drinks such as cafe lungo, tea, hot chocolate, and broth. Fittingly, Italian astronaut and Java fiend Samantha Cristoforetti was the first to try the new machine after it was installed May 3rd. And because no self-respecting coffee lover would ever drink their latte with a straw, a special plastic 3D-printed cup was designed to cope with the demands imposed by microgravity. So now, when you're sitting at your window with a hot cup of joe watching the world pass by, you can delight in the fact that maybe, somewhere way up in the sky, an astronaut is doing the exact same thing, except the view up there repeats every 90 minutes. Reporting from Shawnee, Oklahoma, hometown of original NASA Mercury 7 astronaut Gordo Cooper, I'm Mike Askins, KE5-CXP, for the Amateur Radio Newsline.
With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, DX World, Hap Holly and the Rain Report, NASA, the Ohio Penn DX Newsletter, Philippine Amateur Radio Association, Russ Roberts, KH6JRM, Southgate Amateur Radio News, Twit TV, QRZ Now, and you, our listeners. Our email address for news tips and comments is arnewslinetips@gmail.com. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California 91350. For now, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB in Wadsworth, Ohio, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT, at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide saying 73 as always. We thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2015, all rights reserved.